Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 15, The Descendants of King Priyavrata. This is text 8. Single line, but we'll just do. It's still kind of prose, it's not a particular meter, but. Tasyemam gatam pandaveya. Puravida upagayanti. Tasyemam gatam pandaveya. Puravida upagayanti. Tasemam gatam pandaveya. Puravida upagayanti. Please chant. Tasemam gatam pandaveya. Puravida upagayanti. 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 Any of the bhaktas want to try? You should get into the habit of chanting the verses. Not quite ready? Okay. Matajis. Tasemam gatam pandaveya. Puravida upagayanti. Tasemam gatam pandaveya. Puravida upagayanti. Okay, synonyms. Tasya of King Gaya. Imam, these. Gatam, poetic verses of glorification. Pandaveya. O Maharaj Parikshit. Puravidaha, those learned in the historical events of the Puranas. Upagayanti, sing. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse, my dear King Parikshit, those who are learned scholars in the histories of the Puranas, eulogize and glorify King Gaya with the following verses. Please repeat. My dear King Parikshit, those who are learned scholars in the histories of the Puranas eulogize and glorify King Gaya with the following verses. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The historical references to exalted kings serve as a good example for present rulers. Those who are ruling the world at the present moment should take lessons from King Gaya, King Yudhishthir, and King Prithu, and rule the citizens so that they will be happy. Presently, the governments are levying taxes without improving the citizens in any cultural, religious, social, or political way. According to the Vedas, this is not recommended. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale. Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamane Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Deshatarine Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gyanandana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtang Shapitang Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandehang Shri Guru Shri Yudhapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavaksha Shri Rupam Sagadatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvatam Tang Sajivam. Chadvetam Savadutam Purjana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita. Shri Vishakanvatam Sham. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namoste. Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari. Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanevhyo Vaishnavyevhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivas Adi Gaurabhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So Shukadeva Goswami is speaking to King Parikshit, and he's informing him that those who are actually learned in the histories of the Puranas, and we know the Puranas are a not necessarily chronological history of the past, but selecting important incidents from which we can learn pertinent lessons for advancing in human society. So they glorify King Gaya with the following verses. Some verses are coming up. But the Puranas, as we know, are full of these stories of great kings. Now, why specifically kings so much? Why so many kings? Why not just the Brahmanas, since the Brahmanas are considered the heads of society? Wait, the society is compared to a body. So just as in the body of a head, arms, belly, and legs, those are the major divisions. So similarly, the social body is divided into these significant portions. The Brahmanas are considered to be the head. The Kshatriyas are the arms, the Vaishyas are the belly, and the Shudras are the legs. Now, as Prabhupada pointed out on many occasions, one can get along nicely without even one arm, without even both arms, but you cannot get along without your head. So the head is the most important, relatively, of all of the different divisions of the body. So why not just glorify the Brahmanas? Because the Kshatriyas are also, actually, in the Vedic viewpoint, all parts of the body are important. Relatively speaking, the head is the most important, but the arms are also required. So the Kshatriyas are meant to be saintly kings, not just rulers. All around the world, at one point, even in what we would consider to be non-Vedic culture, there were kings, monarchs. And gradually, those monarchies were abolished. And the few that remain are just in name only. You know, there's a Queen of England, doesn't have real power that monarchs had in the past. She's a figurehead. People look to her as a representative of the past glory of England, but she doesn't really have any power to do anything. There's a parliament, there's a regular parliamentarian style government. But whether you call them kings or not, they're still rulers. And in some countries, they have even more absolute power than any king of the past. They're so they have such control over everything. So they're still rulers. And these rulers have a specific role to perform in society. And they have a specific role that they should perform. Here it's stated, at the end of Srila Prabhupada's short purport, that according to the Vedas, it's not recommended the way the present governments are going, which is to levy taxes without improving the citizens in any cultural, religious, social, or political way. They're not improving the citizens in any way. If anything, they contribute to the degradation of the citizens. I've related this story several times, but I always remember once I was traveling in Europe and I happened to bump into Bhaktivedanta Maharaj. So we did a short trip together in France, and then on the way back through Dole, he was going to Geneva and I was going back to Zurich in Switzerland. So I asked him, what's happening in Geneva? He said, well, you know, he's cultivated many of these UN people. The UN has a headquarters there in Geneva, United Nations. So he had been cultivating quite a few of them. And he said this one gentleman in particular he was going to see, who was the head of the International Labor Relations segment of the United Nations. He said this man is an African man and is very, very favorable to Christian consciousness. And he had told him one time that he couldn't understand why his colleagues in the UN, they didn't like the Hare Krishnas as much as he did. He said, I love you people. I love your food, your music, your philosophy. I love it all. He said, I couldn't understand why they don't like you as much as I do. And he said, gradually he realized. Why? Because we're very strict followers, or supposed to be, of these four regulative principles. And he said, then ignominy, he said, you guys are against meat-eating. Meat-eating is very big business. Meat, slaughter of animals and selling the flesh, it's very big business all around the world. Intoxication, you're anti-intoxication is huge business all around the world. Gambling, tremendous business all around the world. Illicit sex, big, big business all around the world. He said, now I understood why so many people don't like you. Because if people became Hare Krishnas, it would be bad for business. So, the Kshatriyas are meant to see that the citizens follow these religious principles. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. Real Kshatriyas, saintly kings. That's why Parikshit Maharaj, who's listening here to Shukadeva Goswami, he's glorified as being a strict upholder of these principles. Very, very strict. Under his rule, there was no room for anybody to get away with any of this stuff. Nowadays, you know, there's still some kind of religious sentiment, some kind of moral sentiment. People still have a heart, we would say, to some degree. But they're confused. They're not properly trained and not properly guided. Therefore, they want to save the whales. Every time a cat goes up a tree, the fire department comes, and at great expense, they go up there and get them down. You know, people have a heart, and people applaud. But then they will go to McDonald's and eat the mother cow. So, that sentiment needs to be properly trained. Vedic culture means all animals and all plants and all people are given protection. Nobody is to be disturbed or harmed unnecessarily in any way. And therefore we have saintly kings like Shivi Maharaj, who was glorified. He was such a magnanimous person that under his rule, all the animals, all the trees, everyone was happy. So much so that the demigods became a little bit, you could say, envious of his reputation. That this king, earthly king, is so well known for his magnanimity. So they decided to test him. So they came to him, two demigods, it was Vayu and Indra, I believe it was, in the form of a hawk and a pigeon. So the hawk was chasing the pigeon. And the pigeon came to the king and took shelter and said, this hawk is chasing me to eat me. Please protect me. So the king said, of course. So then the hawk came and said, but wait a minute. I'm also your citizen. I have to eat. And my food is flesh. You can't give me grains and curd and stuff like that. I don't eat that stuff. I eat flesh. So the king said, yes. Okay, I will give you flesh from my own body to the same weight as the pigeon. And then that should satisfy you. So the hawk said, yes. So on one side of the scale, they put the pigeon. And the other side, he was actually cutting flesh from his body and putting it on the scale. But because it was a demigod, no matter how much flesh he put there, it couldn't balance out. And he was willing to put his entire body there. And then the demigods revealed themselves. Yes, you're actually a saintly king. So this is how kings are supposed to act. Not that this is just some, you know, stupid pigeon passing stool all over the place. Who cares? Kill it. No, not like that. Every living being is considered praja. Praja means one who has taken birth in that particular kingdom. They're supposed to be given protection by that particular king. But this is a science. This is a culture that gradually became lost. And this is what the Bhagavad Gita is meant for, to reestablish the science. Imam vivasute yogam proktavam aham avyayam vivasan manave praha manur ikshvakave bravit. This is how the fourth chapter begins. Krishna is saying to Arjuna that I taught this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god, and he taught it to his son Manu, and then Manu taught it to his son Ikshvaku. And then evam parampara praptam imam raja shriyavadu sakala inneha mahata yoga nasha parantapa. That in this way, through the cyclic succession, this science was taught to the saintly kings. But in course of time, the cyclic succession was broken and the science as it is appears to be lost. So that's why Krishna came again 5,000 years ago to speak Bhagavad Gita, primarily to be taught to the kings, the rulers of the world. They're supposed to learn Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada says in the beginning of that purport that the purpose of the Gita is for the kings to learn it and then to rule the citizens accordingly. In other words, all these leaders, so-called leaders of today, they're supposed to learn Bhagavad Gita and rule their kingdoms accordingly to the principles of the Bhagavad Gita. The main principle of the Bhagavad Gita is surrender to Krishna. But Krishna gives so many instructions, practical instructions, on how to achieve that. The kings are meant to engage in Krishna service. As Prabhupada was saying yesterday, that all of us, everyone, we're all supposed to engage in service to the Lord. That is the purpose of human life. But the atheist class of men, Prabhupada is pointing out, they say there is no God, God is dead, because that way they can do anything they want, they think. But Prabhupada is speaking in the context of the Ajami Leela. And so in the previous verse last week, it was stated, Kanku, you know, Agni, all of the list, long list of witnesses that witness every single thing that we do. The sky, the air, the fire, the sun, the moon, so many, 10 directions. So many witnesses, a list of 20, I believe. And finally, the super soul. All witness everything that we do. So how can we get away with anything? That was the point of yesterday's verse. You cannot get away with anything. You may be an atheist and think that there is no God, God is dead. But that's not a fact. Every single thing that you do is being witnessed and will come home to roost. And therefore, there is so much pain and suffering in the world today because people are sinful. They don't make the connection that I'm putting this cow flesh in my mouth and then I go around the corner and I get assaulted. Why me? I'm an innocent person. No, you're not innocent. You've committed nothing but sinful activity practically your whole life. Yes, a little bit of charity here and there, you know, help your neighbor here and there, but mostly everybody's living sinful life, breaking these pillars of religion. The pillars of religion are mercy. You break that pillar by becoming a meat eater. There's so much suffering of animals all around the world on a daily basis. So that pain will be revisited on human society on a regular basis. That's why little shaking of the earth. Mother Earth is a sentient being. It's not just, you know, they say Mother Earth, but they don't understand the implication of that. A mother cares for all of her children, not just a few. We know, famous story, Prabhupada told that in India, this boy was so bad, you know, actually it wasn't, I don't think it was even his mother, but he was raised by an aunt. But she was in the role of mother, so she was catering to his every whim, and he turned out to be a rotten person, finally committed some crime and they threw him in jail. So while he was in jail, he called for the aunt to come and visit him. And when she came, called her closer, and then he bit off her ear. And he said, you know why I'm doing that? Because it was your fault that I turned out bad. You spoiled me. So generally speaking, the mother cares so much, even to the point of spoiling the children. But the Mother Earth is not going to tolerate, no matter how you spoil your child, you're not going to tolerate one child killing and eating another child. I mean, we have some mothers here. If you have more than one child, you're not going to say, okay, it's all right for the, you know, stronger child to kill the weaker child and eat it. No real mother is going to tolerate that. So this is a point here. Mother Earth is not tolerating all the sinful activities that go on her surface. And therefore, every now and then, under the order of the Supreme, she gives a little shaking and 200,000 people die. Like that. And they wonder, why is it happening to us? Why? We're nice people. We're good people. We're innocent people. No, you're not. So the leaders of society are meant to learn Bhagavad Gita, learn the principles of Bhagavad Gita, and rule the citizens accordingly. And the citizens will actually become happy. They will actually become happy. Now, nowadays, we have this democracy. So it's not, even if you took charge as a leader, how are you going to, the citizens don't want proper rule. So we have to gradually spread this Krishna culture. Gradually spread this philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. So that the people will become educated as to what is proper leadership and then hopefully select a Krishna conscious person to lead them. Which means that we have to have devotees who are ready to take these positions if they're offered. Now the treacheries are the arms and the vaishyas are the belly. The vaishyas are meant to produce primarily agricultural products. But also, they're involved in banking and trade, minerals, jewels, like that. Nowadays, there are no real treacheries left. Maybe there are a couple of vaishyas I was reading recently the Forbes list of 10 wealthiest men in the world. So number one for 14 years prior was Bill Gates, but now there's a Carlos Slim Helu from Mexico. He's now the world's richest man by $500 million. He's worth $53.5 billion. Huh? And Bill Gates is only worth $53 billion. Oh. So, it's stated here in today's purport that the king's rulers today are simply levying taxes without improving the citizens. So I was also reading another list of the most heavily taxed countries around the world. So number one is Hungary, 38.3% taxation. Practically, let's say 40%. Some countries like Denmark, they have a flat tax, 30%, no matter where you are, how much you make, whether you're a supermarket, you know, checkout person, or you're a wealthy businessman, 30% flat. And other countries like the United States and others, they vary the tax depending on your income. But Hungary is the highest, 38.3%. So how does that relate or compare to what the Vedas recommend? Prabhupada stated that the Vedic culture is 25% taxation. The Kshatriyas own the land, and then they give the land to the Vaishyas to produce. And whatever you produce, you give 25% to the king. If you produce milk products, 25% goes to the king. Produce grains, 25% goes to the king. So flat, 25% tax. But if you don't produce, there's no taxation. That's the difference. In modern culture, no matter what happens, the government is knocking for the tax. You didn't make any money this year, they don't care. They still want their property tax. They still want, you know, they're just squeezing tax out of the population. And not only that, $1 can be taxed many times over. Let's say you're working and you've paid your income tax. Now that tax goes into your bank account. I mean, the balance goes into your bank account. Now every time you go out and spend a dollar, again they tax you for sales tax. And then at the end of, you know, your working days, if you give that inheritance to your son or daughter, they again get taxed. So the same dollar is getting taxed over and over and over again. This is completely unfair. It's completely unfair. Not only that, not only is squeezing too much tax out of the population, but then what do they do with that tax money? What did he do with it? How do the citizens benefit? Here it said that, you know, they don't improve the citizens in a cultural, religious, social, or political way. Because they're not trained about what to do with the tax money. The first thing that the government, the ruler, is supposed to do is to create a safe, sane environment in which people can make real progress in life. Meaning, progress following the principles of Bhagavad Gita. That's ultimately what they should be doing. But they're not doing that. People don't feel safe. They're not safe. In broad daylight nowadays, you could get assaulted, mugged, robbed. They have nowadays, it's all over, but here in LA, they have this home invasion robberies are very popular nowadays. They can't wait for you to come out on the street to hold you up anymore. They come, they knock on your door, you open the door, they invade your home with guns and take everything that you have. So, nobody's safe. And you call 911 and by the time the cops come, they're gone. The robbers are gone. Nobody feels safe because they're not safe. So this guy, Carlos Slim Helu, $53.5 billion, you know. But in Mexico, people are so, feel so destitute and so poor that so many of them are trying to come across the border to America. I saw a documentary once called The Women of Juarez, just south of El Paso on the Mexican side. There is a city, Juarez, which is famous for many, many years now. It's not just a recent thing. So many young girls get killed down there, hundreds and hundreds of them. And they've been trying to figure out who's doing it. Is it the police? Is it the drug cartels? Maybe some American serial killers who come across the border and kill and go back to America, because they've not been able to find anybody that they can charge with these crimes. Huh? So I watched this documentary, and this woman was saying how, you know, a housewife down there, that her and her husband, they got into dispute with the neighbors because the neighbors are trying to steal their land, and so the cops came and arrested them all, took them to the jail, and so you have to pay 250 pesos to get out. They didn't have any money, so they had to spend a night in jail. And while she was in jail, the police raped her. And her husband was there and saying, no, you know, like that. So the people who are supposed to be given protection, not to pick on Mexico, this happens all around the world practically. People who are supposed to give protection, they prey on the citizens. They literally eat the citizens alive. And therefore, in the 12th canto, you'll find prediction that in Kali Yuga, people will run away to the forest. Why? Because the government will steal their wives, will steal their property, will steal their wealth. And out of frustration, they will run away to the forest and live on roots and fruits and honey and stuff like that. Out of frustration. So we can see that's already happening. We're only 5,000 years into the Kali Yuga. And it's already happening. It's really, really hellish situation. So the only hope is to spread this Sankirtan movement. It's really the only hope. Now you take Mexico again. This Carlos Slim Helú, that one person, if they would tax him 25% and then apply that 25% to spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, they could save that country. Here in America, we have so many multi-billionaires just taxing them all around the world. Number four on the list was a guy named Mukesh Ambani in India. He was number four, worth $29 billion. So all of these billionaires, if they would give a fraction of their billions to spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, imagine if, you know, Bill Gates would come and give $1 million to put on the Rath Yatra this year. But that's what's required. In the beginning, people can't take to understanding this philosophy. They're just not qualified because they're too sinful. And so the way to counter that is to spread the chanting of Hare Krishna. Once here on a morning walk in L.A., some devotee said to Srila Prabhupada, you know, Srila Prabhupada, when we tell people about the four regulative principles, they don't want to hear. So Prabhupada stopped and stamped his cane on the ground. He said, why are you surprised? You're preaching to cats and dogs. He said, you make them fortunate by spreading the chanting of Hare Krishna, by spreading, distributing prasadam liberally. This is how you make people fortunate. So if the billionaires of the world will give one fraction of their wealth to spreading Krishna consciousness, follow Ambarish Ford's lead and pledge money to build temples, to distribute prasadam, to distribute the standing of Hare Krishna, then only can the world be saved from this hellish course that it's on. Because there's such a burden of bad karma that inevitably something bad has to happen to relieve that. So the earth shakes and people die, or, you know, wars are fought, still going on, so many wars around the world, just to counter the mountain of sinful reaction that people have to suffer. Because if you don't pay the price in this life, it then piles up, and in the next life you take some horrible birth. So a lot of these wealthy people, obviously they had some good karma from the past lives, and they take birth. For instance, this Ambani, Mukesh Ambani, his wealth is from the Reliance Industries. So that Reliance Industries was built up by his father. So he took birth, nice birth, in a wealthy family. But what is he doing? I don't know personally if he's, you know, religious in any way, but it's not just about you take birth in a wealthy family, just not accumulate more and more and more and more and more. That's not what it's about. Taking birth in a wealthy family means you don't have to worry about anything financial for the rest of your life. Now you can dedicate yourself to spiritual pursuit. Whether he is or isn't, I can't say. I don't know the man personally. But typically they don't. They take birth in wealthy families and they simply become absorbed in making more money and enjoying the money and making more money and enjoying in sinful ways. So those who have wealth have to be advised by brahmanas. Those who are in leadership position have to be advised by brahmanas. The brahminical class, the head is required. Otherwise the arms and the belly just go out of control. So we are meant to be the heads. That's what Prabhupada said. I have to put a head back on this headless society. So as devotees, we are meant to absorb these principles of Bhagavad Gita, live by them, and be ready to instruct the leaders of society and the vices of the society how to properly manage people, rule them, and how to properly utilize wealth. So we can stop here. Any questions, any comments? Okay, Granth Rashi Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.